Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Here we are, keeping it real. I am using Tuesdays of every week to allow people to come on the show and talk about anything that they find in this country of injustices, corruption, deceit, lies, whatever it might be. I'm giving a voice to any of you and all of you who are interested in voicing not only your opinions, but also your concerns and issues that are going on in this country today, especially in the penal system and elsewhere. I know that sometimes being honest and truthful hits the wrong people, and they try their best to bring you down. There's a lot of things that are going on in this country that either people are ignorant of, they don't understand what's going on because they don't try to learn more about it, or they're being told by their peers, friends. They're being misled. As it says in the Bible, many will be misled, and this is what's happening in this country. Many are being misled. Many of you would have to be very insecure to believe anything that anybody tells you, whether it's family, friends, or strangers, unless you yourself look deeper into justice, as Mariam Jacobs always says, the psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. We have people, as I say all the time, from other countries that see everything that we cannot see that's right below our nose and our eyes. They see all the things that are going on, and here we are experiencing it. And many of you are not even trying to find out what's going on. Many of you are listening to peers and deciding and judging people that you don't even know. They used to speak about the mafia all the time. Most people look at mafia as just being the Italians. They don't realize there are mafias in all different races and religions and groups. We have to be able to discern right from wrong. We have to be able to discern those who are being deceitful and lying. Some of us have learned the hard way. Some of us have lost our loved ones to people who have deceived. And whether those people that were deceived ended up dying or ended up in prison, on death row, life without parole, life sentences. That's why we have so much mass incarceration in this United States. When we talk about losses, we're not talking about just victims on the outside of these prison bars. We're talking about victims inside these prisons. We're talking about both sides. And many of us feel so bad for those who have lost their lives, but the families of some of them, and not all of them, very rarely do we find the families of such a nature that they can't accept the fact that they caused their own loved ones to be destroyed, but they continue to try to destroy the persons or people that they brought down, that they caused to stumble. And they use every bit of their connections to do so. You sometimes wonder why someone or others are not remorseful. At first they are, and then all of a sudden you see that they're not. It's because that hatred that's out there for races, religions, cultures of any sort, the hatred is so, so bad that even after losing their loved ones because of their hatred prior to the death, they continue to have that hatred instilled in them, continue to try to bring people down, continue to raise their children to hate someone because they're different. People are different because of the way they were created. Unfortunately, some are born disabled because their parent or parents were severely involved with drugs. I know that there have been children that have been born with the addiction because the parent was so heavily involved in drugs or alcohol. No child is born bad, though. Children are born innocent. But when parents take the time that they should be spending giving their loved one, their newly born babies and children, that love, teaching them compassion, understanding, teaching them love, forgiveness. Instead of doing that, they're raising their children to teach them hatred. What parent, what relative is going to spend their precious moments teaching their kids about hate instead of loving their kids? And if you love your children so much, they're going to grow up with that same kind of love for others. But if you spend your time teaching your children hatred, to hate someone because they're different, those children are going to grow up with the same cold-hearted mind and soul and spirit of the parent that's teaching them that hate. And they're going to go out and they're going to try to destroy someone else's children or child by playing head games. There was a girl who stated her father hated people of color. He hated people of color. He would have a fit if she was going out with the black man. And yet she took that person she was seeing, that she chased after, wanting him to give up everything he had that he had worked so hard for, school, job, everything, to move with her because she was going to ask her a job for a transfer to another state. And she wanted this man whom she claimed her father would have a fit if he knew she was dating. She wanted him to give up everything and move to the very state her father lived in. And when that person didn't do it, she did everything she could to make his life miserable. That's just a pure, simple example of what goes on with so many people in this country. I wonder what would have happened if that person did go down. I wonder if she would have lured him to her father's place, or somehow they would have lured him. We need to think about these things, people, because so many people have stumbled. So many people have committed an offense based on lies, deception, corruption, connections. And that still goes on today. So when you are really, truly trying to do the right thing, be cautious of who you're listening to. Be cautious of what they're telling you. And don't just side with them because you think they're a friend. Because friends don't do things like that. Friends don't get you involved in corruption and lies and deception. And actually, good people that have the heart to feel compassion for someone that has been harmed, as I do myself, they don't take sides. They try to help the person or people, but they don't take sides because they don't know the whole entire story behind it all. They don't know what caused it. But unless you come from the same flock of evildoers, unless you come from the same flock of evildoers, you're going to try to find out what really happens. It's very, very important that you do. Because someday we all have to go before our Maker. We all have to go before our Maker. And many people don't believe that there is a higher power beyond this system of things, beyond the corruption that goes on in this country, in this world. But yes, we do. And we will go beyond. I want to also talk about deceptions when it comes to advocacy. I noticed that some people in these coalitions and meetings, they become so close, so tight-knit. And there are some coalitions that are really a mixture of races, which is good if it's sincere. But I notice that sometimes people are being deceived even when it comes to who they should vote for. We have criminal justice reform, prison reform. We have parole reform. We have environmental reform. We have a lot of different reforms going on. But if you're truly focused on, or you're, say you're really kind of like liberal, somewhat liberal, you're going to vote for people who are liberal or somewhat liberal. People that are going to try to make changes, and vote for people who are trying to make the same changes for the cause. If I were to disapprove of somebody, say in the parole board, I would want to make sure that I disapprove of them for a reason. And I know in some states, some of these people on the parole board that are being looked at in a different light, I noticed there's more. And actually, I spoke with somebody on a board member on one of the organizations. And he said, more in all these years, there were no paroles, no people were being released from prison. But in this past year, there's been a few. There's been a few people who have been released. After all these years, we're finally seeing some prisoners being released who were sentenced to life and life without parole. But yet, the one person of a couple who are of color are being discredited, or one of them is being asked or being promoted to be not voted on. Why would that be? And one person that was Caucasian or is Caucasian, who is somewhat liberal, not conservative, not a part of law enforcement or the government in any serious way, but yet that person was also being talked about as not having any votes for him or any concern for him. I just get so upset when I find some people being deceptive and yet being advocates. So going back to the very beginning, we need to start looking at who we're listening to. You know, I say all the time, people can come on the show, they can criticize me if they don't agree, because I can take criticism. But sometimes people in groups, advocates or whatever they may be, you can't disagree. You cannot disagree without having them turn against you and trying to turn everyone else against you. But the thing is, I myself, in all these years I've been advocating, I'm used to this. It's kind of like a farce. It's a joke. Because these people act like little children. And I say this not just to focus on myself, but to focus on others who have gone through the same thing. And we joke about it all the time. Some of these advocates joke about it, as I do with them and they with me, because it shows the ignorance of advocates that get so upset because someone disagrees with them or someone brings them in their truth out truthfully to the public. I want to say this because we talk about mass incarceration all the time. We can't understand sometimes why it's not decreasing. We wonder why people are not seeing any changes. But we don't ask ourselves, with all these advocacy groups, with all these law firms, with all these lawyers, civil rights lawyers, with all these post-conviction lawyers, with all these appellate lawyers, with all these civil rights lawyers, why isn't there being any changes? I was on the phone earlier with a prisoner from one of the prisons in another state. And he said to me, I notice lawyers now, they're taking their time in helping or getting cases resolved. They're backing away. They're slowing down. They're not taking cases. you know, this is a prime example because I can agree with this prisoner because, and I'll say incarcerated one, incarcerated individual, because people stereotype prisoners, the prisoners are prisoners. Well, individuals are separate from prisoners because they should not be stereotyped. No one should be stereotyped. You know, there was a prisoner that committed one offense in his lifetime, one fatal shot at the time when he was severely depressed. And yet the family that brought him down in the first place have continued throughout the years to prevent that person from progressing in prison, from doing anything productive in prison. They have made sure that they have kept him down. They have deprived every request to take correspondence courses, educational, work programs, everything. We have politicians that have called the Department of Corrections only to be lied to, and they know they're lied to. They know they're lied to. But they don't go beyond anything like that. Only enough to please their constituents for votes. A couple of calls. I give those credit, the politicians, the legislative members credit that go into the prisons and that actually meet with these prisoners. Families Against Mandatory Minimum are encouraging and promoting all advocates, family members of their loved ones in prison, whatever the case may be. Families Against Mandatory Minimum have been trying to get every one of us to stop calling our politicians and saying, hey, please go into the prisons. Please go. Stop making it a habit. Even if it's just three times a year, if politicians, and not just one or two, because in Massachusetts, we've got a couple of really good politicians who have actually been going into the prisons at least three times a year and meeting with the prisoners. It's too bad others haven't been following suit. But those are the ones that will definitely be respected by prisoners, advocates, and family members of prisoners throughout. And I'll tell you, this is something that Families Against Mandatory Minimum should get credit for, it because they're really pushing for this to happen. If politicians were to visit prisoners, they would be here, they would be getting information about what exactly is happening to them in the prisons. They would be getting answers to why there's so many hunger strikes, why there's so many prison riots, why there's so many things going on that the media reports the side of the ones causing it, but they don't report the reason behind it. That's why we have such a messed up media, because they don't want to make themselves look bad to the very people in uniforms with titles that are doing all this corruption. The media is benefiting themselves. Oh, they get to call these people by their first name. You know, they get to go to these golf clubs. They get to do all these things. Well, who that is materialistic wouldn't be doing what the media is doing? The media is part of the problem, not part of the resolution. But if politicians were to go into the prisons and talk with these prisoners, talk with these incarcerated individuals, find out what's going on. Find out why they're where they are. There's one incarcerated individual who has been in a restrictive block going on 3 years for 22 hours a day because he has been unable to get a lawyer, because he has been able to get a politician or anyone to help him. They have written him up. I mean, he must have about 30 disciplinary reports. How can anybody behind those cells, kept in their cells all those hours, have that much? Oh, written up for weapons, written up for all these kind of things. This is a person, a first-time offender who has never committed a crime in his life except for that one during a severe time with depression. A person that was productive prior to going to prison. A person whom they operated on and removed. Cartilages, causing this person to be permanently damaged. Where are the politicians? Where are the legislative members? Where are the advocates? One lawyer, when this individual called, laughed in his face and said, I hope you find a lawyer, because there is a mafia out there, even in the legal field, who has prevented any lawyer from helping a targeted prisoner. This is all over the country. It happens. People might not believe it. It's so bizarre, so ironic. But people with connections, this is what they do. And we, if we're ignorant of what's going on, we are puppets as well. We are being used by the same people that caused some prisoners to stumble. Do you think for 1 minute that these people that are causing you to be misled are your friends? They just figure they got another puppet that they were able to come to their side, that they were able to deceive, to do the evil thing. This is what friends are not supposed to be like. Friends are not supposed to be using you to do something ungodly, something unjust. And I will say one thing. There's a lot of people out there whom you think don't know what's going on, but they do. They're just playing your game. They want to see how racism runs in the minds, the sick minds of people who have that kind of racism and deception and lies. Sometimes you have to play the same game as those who are playing the game with you. And unfortunately, for younger advocates who don't know what's going on, they fall right into that category. They fall right into their hands. And if you're young and this is what's happening with you, you better really wake up. You really need to see what's going on, because if you don't, you're going to fall into a category where you're going to be part of the problem. If you're not already, you're going to be part of the problem, not the resolution. So there's something else we need to talk about. We need to talk about this global warming. It's hitting everybody around the world. And another thing, we have a government that continues to pollute the air. All these manufacturing companies, all these trips to space, the pollution coming from those missiles. What is it all about? Why is it so important to cause the Earth to explode from the heat, only to get up to Mars, only to get up to these planets, only to get up to space? Especially for these people that are so wealthy, they get a chance to go up in a missile for 10 or 11 minutes, but look at all the pollution. But this is also, like I say all the time, it's a sign of the time. People don't realize it. So many people have gotten away from their Bibles or their Torahs or their Qurans. So many people have gotten away from so many things. You know, I'd actually like to also talk about, speaking of the Quran, about the Muslims that were, four Muslims that were recently killed in the past week. They're still looking for the suspects. They don't understand why. Well, we all understand why, just as we understand all these things with the races and religions and all the racism. Cultures and religions under attack. Again, we're living in a country that has deceived us all. A country that has been deceiving us. Smiling, as they told me one time in Florida, smiling in your face and stabbing you in the back. That's how lies and deception and corruption work in the United States of America. I guess you might say that's how it worked in Africa and Middle East and other places as well years ago. Even the blessing that was meant to go to Esau went to Jacob, because Jacob and his mother deceived Isaac, Jacob's father, Rebecca's husband, and Esau's father. That's where the blessing was stolen. And who did Esau end up with? He ended up with his uncle, Ishmael's family, which was of the Muslim race. Jacob became Israel. So, again, for people that study the Bible, you already know this, so I don't really need to get into all of this, but all of this deception and lies all stem from the very beginning. And it still continues. The deception still continues. The hatred still continues. And there are organizations out there that are getting all this funding to represent people whose rights, whose human rights and physical, whose human rights and civil rights are being affected, are being violated severely. Yet they're turning down the people that are going through this, who have been targeted. They're turning down these people. And they're making sure that others turn these people down. And who's behind it? Well, getting back to Jacob is one. Getting back to the Roman guards who actually put the Christ Jesus on that stake from Rome, Italy. We have to look at some of these things that are going on. A lot of people say, you know, the Bible can't all be true. It's been tampered with throughout the years. King James Version, England. You have a lot of these versions of the Bible, which I'm sure have been tampered with, but the message remains the same in all Bibles. And even in the Torah, and even in the Quran, the Bible talks about relationships. It talks about, and Muslims believe in the first five books of the Bible, and that is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and Numbers. They believe in those first five. See, in the Old Testament, it says an eye for an eye. But for those of you who believe in the Christ Jesus, when he came into this earth, came into this world, he came in to take away the sins. Because the priests, even the priests in the world, they were sinners. It had to be somebody pure. So he came through a virgin. Our Creator, our Most High, sent his Son through a virgin to take away the sins. To take away the, it's not about an eye for an eye anymore. It's about truth. It's about love. It's about compassion. It's about mercy. It's about forgiveness. And has anybody in this country demonstrated any of that? Sure, you may not be racist. You may not be targeting anybody. You may not be hurting anybody. But you're not stopping or even trying to stop the corruption and deception and lies that are going on. Not even stopping it. I just feel as though we need so desperately to try to make a change, to try to come together. We need to separate from anyone who tries to prevent anyone from getting help when they're in need. And you can do that. You can do that. You can work with those who are trying to make a difference, a sincere difference. You can work with those who are not talking against another individual whom they do not know. You can help in so many areas to help somebody that's being severely afflicted, severely persecuted, abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, whatever the case may be. And I know a lot of advocates out there who have been denying an individual. And I know many lawyers, many people have been denying an individual of any help at all without even giving a reason, refusing to give a reason. But you know what it says in the Bible? It says, watch out. You never know who it is that you're depriving. Jesus came into this world once, and he was deprived of everything, his life especially, but that was meant to be by the Father, the Most High. You never know who it is that you're actually deceiving, that you're actually harming, that you're actually preventing from helping. You never know who that person is. That person could be the Christ Jesus himself. We're tested all the time by God. Tested all the time. And when you have somebody that you cannot say anything negative about, except that you heard, except that you heard that this person did something to somebody that you know, or somebody that you know knows, or somebody that you know knows, then you have a problem, because you're judging somebody you know nothing about, except the fact that you're friends with the person that's telling you negative things about the individual. And that's why I even go back to the media. The media is reporting things that they hear one-sided from law enforcement, you know, or from others out there. And I'm going to go back to the victims, because I don't for 1 minute, I don't disagree that victims, many victims, did nothing wrong. And we should be there for them. We should always be there for the victims, especially the victims that did not do anything to provoke, did not do anything to harm. So when I talk about victims on the outside, I don't talk about all victims, because the majority of victims deserve to have us support them. They've been through a lot, and they deserve our support. And those victims who come from families who actually caused their own loved ones to be harmed by their adamant hatred towards others, I sympathize with the victim that was harmed, but with the family that caused it with their hatred prior to anything being done to them, their hatred causing somebody decent to fall, to break, to lose it, I have no sympathy for them. And again, let's be real. So there is, again, there's so much going on in this world. But I have to focus on these issues, because we have mass incarceration. And we have a high rate of suicides in this country. And we know there's a lot of racism going on. You know what I noticed too, which is sad, because for a minute, for a while there, things were getting better. It seemed like they were getting better. More and more people coming together. More people interracially marrying. Less talk about racism. There was much less talk about racism. And then all of a sudden, unfortunately, we ended up with the president who came on, a former president that came on and got us started again. But is that good or bad? Maybe it's good, because he brought out all the hidden racism. He brought out all the hidden hatred in this country. And I have to admit, it had to come out. It had to come out, because what we have a lot of hypocrisy. We have a lot of misinformation. We have a lot of lying and deception going on behind our own backs. A lot. So what I want to say to all of you, if you're really trying to make something positive come of all of this, don't listen to your so-called friends. Because a lot of these people incarcerated today, their best friends, their families, who they would have been there for in a minute, their best friends, all of them, they turned their backs. And that's why there's advocates out here trying to help them. because there's so many incarcerated individuals who never in a million years thought that their closest friends would turn on them. So all of these people that you consider your friends that are trying to turn you against a lot of these individuals as well, think about what they would do is if you made a mistake, if something happened, think about how quickly they would turn their back on you. There is one politician on the Cape who grew up with an incarcerated individual. He said he'd do anything for his brother. Anything for his brother. And he knows what this individual was going through at the time. And yet, he turned his back as well. It's been politicians that don't even know the individual that's incarcerated that have been helping. It has been others who don't even know the individual or didn't know the individual who have been helping. While this so-called piece of crap that called himself a friend turned his back, yet was saying so many times, this is like a brother to me. He is like a brother to me. We're living in a world that's so full of hypocrisy, a world that's so fake. But not so many countries as this country itself of the United States of America, united. United to do what? To do more harm? United to make positive changes? United to look deeper into crime? Look deeper into these offenses? A country that turns a blind eye to all this crime that's going on with people in uniform, with people with titles. That's why so many people want to join the police force, and so many people want to join politics, and so many people want to join all these areas of employment where there's uniforms and titles, because they know they can get away with it. What kind of society allows these things to happen? What kind of society will allow in media? What kind of media outlet allows these things to happen? Because someone is in uniform, they can do anything they want. Someone that has a high title. How many have we heard of who have committed crimes? Look at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, Trump's estate. They just now invaded his home in Florida because they found he had done so much hiding of classified information from the White House. Just now, we've been listening to the news every single day and hearing about all of this corruption going on. All of these people that are coming forth to talk about what they saw while they were under his employment, while he was president. These are his own people. And yet we're hearing all this talk. Somebody asked one of the legislative members, why don't you arrest him? Why don't you bring him in? Why do they keep putting it off? And the person said, changing the subject, started talking about something else. They don't know what they're doing. The committee is bringing out all this information and everybody's getting arrested and everything, but the person that they're trying to bring down, they're not even talking about any charges. It doesn't make sense. We're living in a very hypocrisy. We have a caller, 347. We're living in a very hypocritical country. Hello? Want to state your name?
It's Rakiva, sister.
How you doing? I'm glad.
I'm coming on for a few minutes. I'm having an issue right now with, okay?
I want you to talk about the issue with your son.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me. What's going on now in the Pendleton Correctional Facility is that my son is locked down. His total dorm is locked down due to the fact that three individuals came down with COVID, one of them being his bunkie. And I'm really concerned because no precautionary measures have been taken in order to help prevent the COVID as well as the Legionnaires prior, from spreading within this particular area in the dorm. The fact still remains is that my question is that this appears to be some type of form of attempted murder because of the valid and legit complaints that have been raised against the facility, the inoperable ventilation system, the outbreak of Legionnaires as well as COVID. The prisoners in that facility, including my beloved son, have no access to the outside. People that are coming in and out of the facility are civilians as well as correctional staff. So my thing is this here. Why isn't that the warden, who is a former Guantanamo Bay officer, Dennis Regal, is not taking the necessary precautions under the Department of Health guidelines to have these individuals isolated in the area where they could be properly and medically treated. At this time right now, I haven't heard. My son attempted to call me the other day, and I unfortunately had missed the call because I'm having issues with my phone. Nonetheless, I attempt to call the facility, but they make themselves unavailable to myself and other people because they don't want to answer the phone. Everything is answered by voicemail or rerouted, and they don't get back to you as they should. And this has been going on for some time now because of the concerns and questions of how that particular facility, one of the most notorious in the state of Indiana, is being run. And instead of them trying to take measures to rehabilitate and make people better human beings so when they come out here, they can be productive citizens out here in this crazy society, they do things that are very punitive in order to create more hatred and hostility. And then we wonder why we have the issues that affect our communities, We know that something has to be done. We've been talking about this for centuries now, before most of us were born. We have to stop.
I said exactly.
Yes, centuries. Slavery has never left America since the year of 1619. It continues on to this very day, and it's happening inside the prison industrial complex. That's where it extended to. How serious are people about Amendment 13, the 13th Amendment? How serious are they? Black and brown people are due reparations. We wouldn't have the crimes that we have going on. A lot of people like my son, your son, and other individuals who are innocent, and amongst those who are either incarcerated because they're guilty or victims of circumstance, we wouldn't have the issues in our communities and abroad had the proper measures been taken to pay the dues, and that's reparations. We are black and brown communities, aside from others abroad. We wouldn't have homelessness. We wouldn't have poor health care. We wouldn't have miseducation. We wouldn't have unemployment.
I was going to say we'll start with the coronavirus now. You said, another incarcerated individual had also mentioned this at one of the prisons in Massachusetts, I believe it was Norfolk.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned a while ago that this individual is 65 years old, but he was mentioning how they had their coronavirus, they had their vaccine, and they had their booster shot, but yet they were bringing prisoners into the same block as they were that had not been vaccinated. And you mentioned the same thing happening with your son, and this is in Indiana. So and I say, when you talk about, and this is what a lot of times people talk about their state as though their state is the only one that's going through these corrupt prisons and these Supermax and all these issues. But you know what? It's not just Indiana. It's not just Massachusetts. And this is what people feel. When advocates come together, when families come together, when people come together to address these issues, when they call in like you do, then we're starting to see that the problem is not in just one or two states. It's all over the country. And yet people are always saying, this country, this prison is the worst, or this state is the worst. It's not. It's every state is the same, but they operate differently. And every prison, a lot of them are the same. You're going to have more happening in one or two prisons than you're going to see in the other prisons. But you're coming on the show, you're talking about it, and this is what we need to do, is talk about it. And the thing is, people of color, a lot of times someone might say, oh, it's always about color. It's not always about color. It's about the people that are not calling in. It can't be happening to them because they may not be of color, and they're not calling in to talk about it. This is why I say the statistics, when you think about it, and anybody can go to the Bureau of Prisons and get all this information, the statistics of people of color around the country and the abuses that they go through are much, much higher than those who are not going through it. But again, we have people that don't take it serious because it's not happening to them or their loved ones.
Unless they're directly impacted, that's when people become involved. And I'm not saying that it doesn't happen to the white community, you know, but the fact still remains is that it's our immediate community who has endured the torturous mental and physical abuses that extend on from slavery up until now. And, you know, I'm passionate about that. We're up in our old age and whatnot. We're doing the best we can by discussing it, but I would like to see more action, you know. I find these candidates, with the exception of Mr. Falk, who nothing on the agenda discusses criminal, and I hate the word reform myself, but, you know, as everybody relates to criminal reform, rehabilitative services, nothing is in discussed in that direction in regards to wrongful convictions, wrongful incarceration, how they how the system creates and designs these upending people's lives. You know, you throw them in prison, you discredit their name. When they come home, they look to try to reestablish themselves so they can successfully reacclimate themselves into society, and they can't find a job, they can't find housing because there's discriminatory laws in regards to both of them areas there, even though you can sue and take them to court, provided that it's given to you in writing. Nonetheless, no candidate for us, but even, and I've been home for 11 and a half years now on this wrongful conviction, no candidate, to my knowledge, has even discussed that. If anything, people who bring these issues to them, you know, they form these little sideline deals, you know, where they generate more income amongst themselves, but not for the whole of the people who are directly impacted by these issues when it comes to the criminal injustice system, you know. And like I said, we have to start, we discussed this in a couple of your shows back. We have to just start discussing the fact who we put in office, who is really geared to trying to uplift the community, not only uproot the crime out of the community, but also give jobs, give rehabilitative services to individuals who are trying to get their self established, who are trying to get their lives together, trying to reestablish familiar ties, you know, with family and what have you, with community. You know, we need to address those issues. Money needs to be generated into that, not just for people take a photo ops in the community or you give a turkey give a turkey away once a year. Like, people got mad. I said, if the leaders eat, the people should eat. You knock on my door, you tear my door off the hinges, looking to get elected. But after the election, once you're voted in, we don't see you no more till the next election. And the issues pile up and get worse.
Exactly. You know, I will say, I say this all the time. There's a state, there's a state representative. Her name is Liz Miranda in Massachusetts. Liz Miranda lost her brother. He was murdered. And Liz Miranda has been fighting to abolish life and life without parole sentences. This is a state representative who lost her brother to murder. And she has been fighting for prison reform as well. Now, this is the difference between somebody who lost a brother and has been fighting to do the right thing and people, especially one family that lost a daughter, and unfortunately a case of mistaken identity, who has not only prior to that tragedy, but since that tragedy has done nothing but try to destroy the individual who they messed up in the first place. And this is why I say when we come across representative legislative members like her, like Liz Miranda, and we come across anyone like Liz Miranda, because that is an exception. She is an exception to the whole thing. She's been fighting to see these changes be made, not only to see the changes in the prison system, but also for other things that she's been fighting for in the community. So I just have to take my hat off to her because she is really special. Mary Keefe is a state representative from Worcester, Massachusetts. And Mary Keefe has also been going into the prison and visiting with them. So that's why I say we have people in politics that are doing some good. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people in, not only in politics, but also in the community who have prejudged. And that's sad.
Very sad. Ms. Miranda puts me in mind of Eric Gonzalez, who is the Brooklyn district prosecutor who took over the brother Thompson, Kenneth Thompson, who had mysteriously died. You know, I still have my theories in relation to his death. I mean, when we're going to go, you know, it's decreed to die, we're all going to die. But the fact is that the brother had a record of overturning these wrongful convictions in the county of Brooklyn or county of Kings here in New York. And then all of a sudden, at the age of 50, he mysteriously dies with some form of cancer. We know how these government arts operate when it comes to issues like this, when people are doing the right thing. And unfortunately, it takes money out of the system that people live comfortably off of at the cost of destroying people's lives, you know?
Yeah.
But Eric Gonzalez also had a loved one murdered, and he also advocated for the person to be paroled after that person took his loved one's life.
And what was his position?
He's the Brooklyn prosecutor. He's the head prosecutor of the County of Kings here in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, okay.
Eric Gonzalez. I've been trying to reach out to him. What happened prior to Kenneth Thompson passing away, I went to his office to ask if he could advocate on my behalf to the Queens District Attorney's Office because of the corruption that went down in my case with this wrongful conviction. And it just out of nowhere, the guy died, you know? So
yeah.
I was I'm still recovering from getting hit by an ambulance. I'm still, a lot of things have hindered and slowed me down. However, I'm still having, stopped. I'm still going to reach out to the Queens and Kings County. You know, I'm very apprehensive, but I'm still going to reach out because I want my name clear. You know, I hope I don't have to wait 50 years, unfortunately, in the situation people that were falsely accused of his murder, you know, that I wouldn't have to wait that long, you know, and it shouldn't take that long to overturn. Just like they immediately frame you and wrongfully charge you and wrongfully arrest, indict, and try you and wrongfully convict you and wrongfully incarcerate, they do that immediately. It shouldn't take 50 years to try to undo an injustice that the system created.
Well, you know, just like you say, it depends on the prosecutor, too. That Eric Gonzalez, I take my hat off to him. But we have a population in this country of prosecutors that will lie, that will tamper with evidence, that will bring in people to try to discredit the defendant, the defendants. I mean, it happened here in Massachusetts, and, you know, we have some corrupt prosecutors, really corrupt. And unfortunately, that's why Massachusetts has people in prison that don't even belong in prison, or they should not be in the situations they're in. But we have, you know, in one particular case, after the prisoner was sentenced to life without parole, all of these people involved ended up being promoted. The prosecutor, one of them became a police officer, a local police officer, to a private investigator. We had one that became a congressman who is no longer in Congress at all now. But and when the incarcerated individual left the country because he felt he could not fit into this country because of the racism, it wasn't the federal government that went looking for him. It was the people from the local community, from the place where the crime took place. Now, how did that, you know, this is Massachusetts. This is how Massachusetts operates. They're very, very discrediting. They try to discredit the good people and cover up the evil that goes on around that good person. But anyway, please finish.
No, I'm so sorry. This is not to discredit or swear anybody here. The individual who murdered my baby had a record in Massachusetts, and he was convicted in Winthrop, and I believe in Boston, Massachusetts, for sexual assault and rape of young girls under the age of 16. Mm-hmm. Cedric Hamilton has gotten away with being prosecuted, charged and prosecuted for murdering and molesting my 8-year-old daughter that a week later I was wrongfully framed for. This individual comes out of the state of Massachusetts. He came to New York. He had kidnapped his son, who's now a grown man by the name of Corby. And in the process of even kidnapped, during the time that he did this to my daughter. Okay? I didn't find out all this information until after the fact that I was framed a week later. After I had found her, and a week later I was framed because the police here in the state of New York, in a very brand new precinct, the 115th precinct had just opened up. So in order to make a name for themselves, I was one of their victims who they framed, them in conjunction with the 114th and 110th precinct. Now there's a detective who arrested Cedric Hamilton back in 1986 for armed robbery and attempted murder on Port Authority police. Part of that armed robbery was the hotel that all of us lived in, a homeless hotel in Queens next to LaGuardia Airport, which has now been revamped and called from the travelers. Now it's being called the Hamptons. But this detective mentioned to me, I said, he murdered my daughter. He said that happened. The detective, this is what he said without me adding anything. Oh, that happened at the Travelers Hotel? I said, yes. That was back in 1986. They called my mother. This is how screwed up the same prosecutor that's been after me since 1979 when he tried to frame me down with my soon-to-be 43-year-old son this month. He turned around and called my mother. That's how screwed up his office papers were. And telling her that he had Cedric Hamilton, a.k.a. Clyde Williamson, in custody for attempted murder on Port Authority police and armed robbery. She said, well, he killed my grandchild. When you going to let my daughter go? And my mother at the time said the phone clicked. He hung up on her. So she called back. Because he had the nerve to call her at her job at the Bronx Legal Services where she was working at the time. He had the nerve to call her at her job to tell her this information. So when my mother called back, oh, I'll look into it. It never got looked into.
And your mother was working for a legal agency?
My mother was working for Bronx Legal Services. That's how I used to work for them, too, as a young intern back in the day. That's when I had Tupac's mom, Fanny Shakur. I miss her so much. Fanny Shakur. Okay. Hold on a second. Just stay on.
stay on. She has quite a few things going on. But it's what she's talking about is some of
this
the
is a prepaid call from an inmate at the Indiana Department of Corrections, Pendleton Correctional Facility.
To accept this call, your current balance is $26.86. This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Thank you for using GTL.
I'm sorry. Is this your son?
How are you feeling, son? We on here now. I brought you into the room. I have people in the room here with me.
I'd like to hear from your son. I'd like to hear from your son, Bekiva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and go ahead. I know you on another extension. Yeah.
What is his name again?
Sirajuddin Abdul Qadir.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
My name is Sirajuddin Abdul Qadir.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you?
Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience and tell us what's been going on where you are?
My name is Sirajuddin Abdul Qadir. I'm currently incarcerated at a facility in Indiana, Pendleton. And they got a COVID-19 outbreak. The whole campus on lockdown quarantine.
We were talking about that earlier. Your mom was telling us about it.
Yes.
I'd like to know, first of all, how is your tooth? Your mother was saying that you had a terrible toothache for quite a while. Did they finally resolve it? Pardon?
Yes, ma'am. But after 2 months, they finally ended up pulling my wisdom tooth out.
You were in pain for 2 months?
For 2 months, and they denied me. Actually, they sent me a call out to come over there, and the correctional officer didn't tell me. They sent me straight to work, and I missed that pass. So the dentist, he sent me a call out saying, you got to wait another 30 days before we even see you.
Jeez, yeah, God.
It was another month. I was literally losing sleep and all.
You know, these games they play, there was a paralegal that went to the prisoner one time, and the guards told the paralegal that the prisoner didn't want to see anybody, and the paralegal left without even questioning, without even saying, I want to hear it directly from the prisoner's voice. He left and never went back to him. So what you're saying, I believe what you're saying is true, and I'd like to have you go on and talk about some of these other issues that you're going through.
The COVID-19 outbreak, we're behind a 20-foot wall. How do we get COVID? I mean,
yes, right.
These COs come in here, and they literally refuse to take shots. I understand that. If this is your belief or whatever, you don't have to take no COVID shot. But if you come in here sick and you infect the whole prison population, I mean, that's not right. We can't go out there and get it. It's got to be brought to us, this virus. And This is the third time they had an outbreak down here like this.
My God.
It happened in Massachusetts, too, where the prisoners that were already vaccinated and had received their booster and everything, they brought in all these prisoners and they mixed them all together. And the prisoners were furious because they had already been vaccinated. The reason I'm saying this is because I was just telling your mother in the audience, this is something that's ongoing. This is the corruption. This is where the taxpayer dollars are going.
Attempted murder.
They're going to waste. If this is where the taxpayer dollars are going, I'm sorry. This is another thing. In Indiana, not to get off the subject, you have to be, in order to be tried and convicted for the charge of attempted murder, you have to maim, injure, frighten, or come in contact with a victim. You have to actually try to harm somebody. I'm sitting here sentenced to 35 years. There's no gunfire, no gun on my person. Nobody got shot. I never came in contact with a victim. And the only witness got on the stand on me was some crooked drug task force and said, him, we believe, we think. No physical evidence, I mean, literally nothing.
Only
in a kangaroo court, 4 hours of bench trial.
How
took him 4 hours.
Ask, how long did your trial last?
4 hours.
My God.
Your entire trial only lasted 4 hours?
4 hours in front of a Howard County judge, Brent J. Perry, bench trial, 4 hours. Didn't even listen. He didn't look at or listen to or hear half the evidence. I mean, told my attorney, I'm going to take it home and look at it, and came back the next day, and he's like, guilty. Of what?
This is a main problem, a major problem. I was saying the other day, as a social worker, we were always given 30 days to do an assessment of the situation. When it comes to somebody's life and conservation, they should have the opportunity to have more than 30 days to prove it. In your case, so again, another prisoner target in this country.
I mean, to be honest with you, if you look at this whole situation of me being incarcerated, they had to break the law to get me here. It was a whole 4 hours consisted of conspiracy. This is all the thing they were talking about. They never said Mr. Kabir did anything. They were just saying he conspired, conspiracy. Find me guilty of conspiracy and attempt, and the law says you can't do that. It says a person may not be convicted of conspiracy and attempt under the same underlying crime. So they get me to sentencing and says, well, we're going to dismiss this conspiracy and leave you to 35 years for attempted murder. On who? On what? It was never brought up attempted murder on nothing in no trial. It was just a conspiracy. We believe he conspired, we believe, with no evidence.
So you got
no recordings, no wiretap,
for
nothing. And there is no victim. I'm sending prison sentence to 35 years. There is no victim on this case.
So
and my son is the son of a Vietnam veteran. This is what kills me. I have family members in my family, his father included, who I was once married to, is a Vietnam veteran that fought for the very freedoms that people so-called enjoy in this country. And yet and still, our family members and my son right here is wrongfully convicted in the state of Indiana doing 35 years for a crime that never happened.
What I was going to say is, do you currently have a lawyer?
To be honest with you, the lawyer that we currently have, in the last 2.5 years, this guy told us he did 21 hours of work.
Nothing.
Case. His name is Mark Small. He's literally, I probably ran into another 16 to 17 inmates in here already that says this guy has messed their life up. I mean, he's still taking cases. I mean, I just asked the judge back in June the 28th, my last court hearing, to postpone and give me a motion to postpone my court hearing so me and my family could hire competent counsel. The dude just wrote me, the same attorney, wrote me today. I think the letter said, ma'am?
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The letter said something pertaining to he wants to still represent my case or something along the lines. I've written him back twice telling him your actions are unacceptable. You don't even respond to emails, phone calls. I mean, he writes me every 9 or 10 months through snail mail and tells me nothing. I've asked him to stay in contact with my family, friends, me. If you got to do snail mail once a month, just keep me posted on everything you got going on with my case, what you filed and everything else. And he's still yet to do any of that in 2.5 years. I've seen him one time.
You know something? As bad as it may seem, at least you got somebody right now. I'm sure you can do something that might be really fighting for you.
I don't think he's fighting for me. To be honest, he's fighting somebody. It's not me.
Well, We're having that with a lot of prisoners of color, believe me. It's happening all over.
It's a sad situation, and you can't do nothing but put the situation in God's hands, and inshallah, he'll sort it out. But I'm still fighting, and I'm not going to give up.
Never give up.
Never.
Never give up. You know, we are a strong people, and unfortunately, we have a lot of people in society that are judging, prejudging, that are trying to bring people down that they don't need to bring down. As I told them earlier, I brought it out earlier, a lot of times the very people that are feeding them all this misinformation and all this hatred are the very people that were turned against them at the time it became that they had to get something for.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%.
I want to thank you for coming on and talking about these issues, though, because it's long overdue. You know, the prisoners don't get their voices heard. The media only reports one side of a story. And this is where the problem is. The media corrupts prosecutors, corrupts lawyers. One lawyer left. The other day, I tried to speak with the lawyer who just continuously screamed like she was some mad woman. Continuously screamed. And this goes to show you the evil was in her. Unfortunately, people can be very easily influenced by evil spirits. And they don't have that strength that we do. And they can be influenced very easily. And we have people in society that are influenced very easily. And we have people in society that don't speak out. People have had an opportunity for the last couple of years to come on and speak about their concerns or the issues. But they don't. So you know they're not that much. It's not the captain. It's not the captain to fight for injustice against injustice. And it's not their passion to fight with all of them if they don't come on and talk about it. In your case, your mother even had to come on and talk personally about it. We should have that from others, but they don't.
Yeah.
Whether it's fear, whether it could be that they're afraid. It could be that they're out. They're insecure and they don't want to mess up with their feelings. It could be for a number of reasons. They have the opportunity.
It's sad. I mean, if you're already in the situation, I mean, it's you can only go anywhere but up. I mean, they can't do no worse to you. We're already here. So why not come on here and speak out against it and let the world know the foolishness going on here?
You know, I'm glad you said that because a lot of prisoners, a lot of people, families of incarcerated now, their loved ones are saying, we're getting abused anyway. So whether we speak or we don't, we're getting abused. So we might as well let the problem out, let the people know what we're going through. And that's why I appreciate you coming on. Because prisoners are being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed. They're going through all these things already. What do we have to lose? So that's why it's good to speak out now. If nothing else, we might help.
A couple of situations like a couple of months back, they had a legionnaire outbreak. The water was contaminated. And they took all the water fountains out of every single cell house they had down here. And they kept telling us, nothing wrong with the water. You can drink it. You can drink it. Two inmates ended up dying. About 10 got sick. And then they come on the TV. Oh, we have a legionnaire outbreak. Don't drink the water. Boil it. But at the same time, the administration was telling us everything was cool. The news is telling us don't. Y'all in the county, I think Madison County or something like that, or Pendleton, whatever the correction facility is, do not drink the water. Don't brush your teeth with it. Don't wash your hands with it. Boil it, if anything. And these folks are still telling us, nah, you can drink it. It's okay. They're still cooking the food with the water and everything.
Oh, God.
You know, we had, on one of the Facebook groups, there was a woman that put down that her boyfriend or her husband worked in the kitchen in one of the prisons. I can't remember the date of what. But that she was actually seeing that this is what they wanted them to continue to feed the prisoners.
He was saying what? It's a company. They have a contract with a company named Airmark. And like right now, since we've been on quarantine, what they do is they'll take food from us. They won't serve us 3 hot meals a day. We haven't had 3 hot meals a day in probably almost a year and a half, 2 years now. What they do is they serve you a sack lunch with cereal, 4 pieces of white bread, and a beverage drink. That's your breakfast.
That's a diabetic menu.
This is what everybody for the last almost 2 years, this is what you've been getting for breakfast, and then they give you a hot meal for lunch, and then they give you 2 peanut butter sandwiches for dinner.
Anything to fat, and you want, but it's not healthy, a lot of it.
I mean, I was told that all that eating that white bread is basically setting you up for future diabetes.
Right.
Mm-mm.
And they don't see nothing wrong with it. They keep feeding to us, keep stuffing us with this it basically poison. And then it feeds you a lot of soil. You know?
Thank you for using GTL.
Oh. They don't give them warning before they disconnect?
No, they don't. They supposed to, unless they turn around there and they intercepted the call. You know, my son has to be careful with that too, because what these persons, what they do is that when they, you know, they monitor the calls and whatnot, he could be penalized. Also, what I find is a violation of his First Amendment right, as well as the other people that are incarcerated in Indiana. They have a policy that they don't care if the prisoner didn't know nothing about it. If they come with social media, they get penalized and a disciplinary action is taken. This is what you actually find on a visit application in the state of Indiana. If you get a chance to pull, you or anybody that's on will get a chance to pull up online. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And investigate and see for themselves. I couldn't believe that if the prisoner doesn't know, you're still going to serve disciplinary charges against them.
Well, you know,
it's
the same with prisoners when they're on blocks where a fight breaks out between some prisoners or gang members or whatever, and they make all prisoners suffer by locking them all down. They're already being locked down into a cell 2 hours a day, and then all of a sudden an incident happens and they make everybody pay. It's not right. It's like I said with the paralegal that went to visit a prisoner. You know, they told the paralegal the prisoner didn't want to see her. Well, the paralegal should have had enough sense to know if this individual is begging for help and asking us to go to visit with him.
Yes.
The very people who he's complaining against tells the paralegal he doesn't want to see her. What does she do? She leaves and doesn't go back. That's why we have some legal systems in Massachusetts, and I'm sure elsewhere, but we have some prisoner legal systems that that feel prisoners. They feel the prison, and they're supposed to be the ones helping, as your son was just talking about, the lawyer that he has is doing nothing for him. So we have a major problem with prisoners being persecuted behind those prison walls, with lawyers who are doing absolutely nothing, very little, or picking and choosing who they want to help. And we have people.
And I have them.
Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead, since I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please. I want you to speak.
No, I apologize. No, because I don't want to, like, I'm cutting you off. I feel horrible because my intentions, as well as the young lady here now, who's all of a sudden, I don't know what her purpose is, you know, before, because you know, she had helped me raise the money. Now all of a sudden, it's like she's almost ghost. I don't know what's going on in her life. But the fact is that we raised this money. We were kind of, like my son said, constant in contact, trying to get a hold of this lawyer. He don't answer call. Oh, I can't talk right now. You know, I'm driving. How many times are you drive all day and day? I understand lawyers are in and out of court. But there has to be some time of the day that you take phone calls and follow up. We hired this lawyer. He was recommended by somebody in the movement. This is why I question ethics in the movement, because it's not like when I came up in the movement, you understand what I'm saying? People were about results and bettering the conditions of our communities, not about a dollar sign clout chasing. Now, this person, like I said, was recommended by somebody within the movement, okay? And come to find out, like my son said, he ran into 13 people. One of them, the family paid up to $30,000 to this attorney who claims to be Black Lives Matter on Twitter and Antifa. But yet and still he has maliciously, okay, taken inconsiderate amount of money from family members and still leave their loved ones incarcerated, okay? I don't know the circumstances of the case, but the fact still remains as a person of the law, you're supposed to be able to undo the harm that a prosecutor's office, you understand what I'm saying, does to an individual when they're trying to make a name for themselves and get a conviction. You know, prosecutors, in part, I know here in New York, you know, prosecutor's job is not to seek justice and not merely convict. But you have these 18B attorneys, these legal aid lawyers, or even private lawyers, which we hired, who charged us $6,000. And he said if it wasn't successful on the PCR, a post-conviction relief motion, that he would charge us an additional $2,000 on the appeal. Like my son said, so far, he has executed hardly anything. The so-called 21 hours, I'm saying doing what? Nothing. He had the audacity to send an itemized list and then charge $7,000 and change for doing nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely nothing.
That happened with me with two lawyers. And I'll tell you, we need to start our own little clique where we can start having people of color come to us to find out who they can get as an attorney. We have to have attorneys of color or attorneys that are honest to be able to.
Well, we have that. We have that, but they sold out.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. They sold out.
They sold out, sister.
And I'll tell you
nothing.
These people of color that have organizations like the NAACP and the National Action Network and a lot of these others, that to me, you talk about money. Money became more relevant, more important than human life. And that's sad. That is sad.
In fact, you talk about Nan. I reached out to Nan. Sharpton used to have, when I used to live in Brooklyn, here in Brooklyn, New York, in the Bed-Stuy area years ago, I reached out to Sharpton then. I don't know what happened when I was wrongfully incarcerated, but his location got moved from Bed-Stuy, Crown Heights area, to Madison Avenue here in Harlem. So I understand when I was involved in incarcerated, that location got burned down. So he ended up in one of my other old neighborhoods in Harlem, a block over on 145th Street. I'm telling you from my experience, and I tried to push aside with the negative responses. I said, because I wrote his office. I wrote all his offices, in fact, aside from go to one when I was, before I got framed. And I've never either not received a response, or when I personally went to the office on 145th Street, I've had negative rejection by individuals. And this is not so much from his daughter, you know, his wife, his ex-wife, I know personally because she used to be in the James Brown band. I don't know her, you know, real good like that, but we've met, you know, from time to time. And the fact still remains is that people said the reason why I was not helped is because I didn't come with a bag, meaning that I didn't have no money to finance whatever he would do. And then one of the mothers of the Exonerated Five, who's a friend of mine, you know, who I consider a friend,
that she said, no, if you went to him personally, tell him. I said, you know how many times I have requested to have an appointment with him and how many times I've been blocked going in there? I don't want to put you on the spot because I don't like, you know, I have a thing with people, oh, well, use this one. No, I don't like that term, use this one or use her to go. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I've reached out to man numerous times while I was incarcerated wrongfully and since I've been home for 11 and a half years on this wrongful incarceration, okay? And I have not at any time, okay, received assistance, even when they had the event, the Me Too event, because I've been one of those that have been affected, directly impacted. And I went to speak with him. I went to speak with Miss Kathy, who I said, Miss Kathy, I haven't seen you in years. You know, teasing with her because they said she cussed a lot. I said, may Allah forgive me. I still cussed a lot too, but I toned it down some. So we was laughing on that. But the fact, you know, it takes events, social events to try to catch people in order to get help. And I wasn't successful with that. So I'm saying, like, come on. You know, y'all put all this information out that you do X, Y, Z, but any other time. And the same for the NAACP. The same thing for CORE. Y'all said you help people who are directly impacted by the criminal justice system, especially black and brown people who are wrongfully incarcerated or victim of circumstances. But when you reach out to these organizations and people, it's always a price tag. And they know most of us don't have money because we're poor. But we need the representation, and because we can't afford the representation to help line their pockets and whatnot. And I'm not trying to be insulting, but I'm discussing the reality, and it's based on my experience and still trying to fight and get justice for over four decades now, dealing with these people.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to have you once again give the audience your name and any way that they can help in anything that you might want them to know.
Well, we still know how to sell it. My name is Rakiva Fatima Basir, you know, framed under Fatima Basir. I could be reached at 732-993-8989. Due to health issues that's been going on, we're still in process of trying to revamp and open up a new website for legal defense on behalf of Sirajuddin and to seek an attorney. We need an attorney before September 28th. Unfortunately, the oppressive timeline has been set by this judge, Brant Parry, P-A-R-R-Y, who operates out of Howard County in Indiana, and especially in the Ku Klux Klan state of Ku Klux Klan County of Kokomo. He set a deadline up to September 28th. They're still trying to force his attorney that my son no longer wants on record, and he expressed that to the judge. So, you know, in any event, if anybody has any additional ideas or suggestions to try to help expedite this, you know, if they know of any attorney who is willing to do pro bono wrongful conviction, or they know somebody within the Innocent Project, you know, that this is qualified and vetted, please, by all means, you know, you can contact me, 732-993-8989, or you can contact Sirajuddin if you're an attorney. His address, I don't have right before me, but it's the Pendleton Correctional Facility.
They can get that from you directly. They can get that from you directly if you don't have that information. I was also going to say, from now on, we're going to be, if anyone knows of any attorneys who are not corrupt, who are willing to help with any cases, or who are just out there that people know can be relied upon without deception, please let us know so that we can start a listing of legal providers who are not down with the corruption. And if so, please let us know. And you can let us know at 508-583-0051 or at NVO, NS, and Nancy Victor Oscar, P-R-E-S, as in Samuel, at gmail.com. I want to, once again, Akiva, I want to thank you for coming on, for having your son come on and sharing some of this injustice going on. Again, we are all going on through these things, and we are all being divided, and we have to realize who is behind dividing all of us.
Yes.
We have to keep that in mind, because we know, as they say, they smile in your face and stab you in the back, and unfortunately, that's what happens with some of the cases that we are dealing with and some of the things that we are going through and our loved ones. So thank you once again for coming on. I look forward to having you come on again.
You're welcome.
Tuesday. Tomorrow, I am scheduled to interview Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. She is unsure at this time whether she will be able to make it on the show. She has a lot going on right now. She's been working on her book, and also she's been working on other things, but she's going to try to make it tomorrow. So please join us, and hopefully we'll see you as well, or hear from you as well, Bakiva. And I thank you once again for coming on. We are going to be ending this episode. I just want to make sure that everyone is aware as well that on Thursday, let's see, we will be having, Thursday will be the 11th. We will be having Sandy Fries, author of The United States Injustice System, regarding prisoner stories. Sandy Fries will be on with us on Thursday, and that will be at 11 a.m. 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So we look forward to having you on. Once again, Bakiva, thank you so much. And we are going to end this episode now. Thank you all for listening in.